there's moonbeams in your elbows, and there's rivers in your hair. And I wanna see you forever, babe, forever. Don't take me back in time now, but there's nothing for me there.
Welcome to On the Wing Podcast, fueled by Purina Pro Plan. I'm going to start today's episode with a quote from the great American novelist Ben Ames Williams, not to be confused with Ben O. Williams. Ben Ames Williams wrote, "Any hunter may make their dog what he or she will be with patience, coupled with the gift of teaching the dog to understand." That's where I've run into trouble personally in the past, getting my dogs to understand what I want out of them. The hunter in today's episode is a familiar name to most of our audience, Purina's very own Dr. Ruth Ann Lobos. And to translate from the bird dog's perspective, making his On the Wing podcast debut, is actually his podcasting debut, Justin King of Dockins Oak Ridge Kennels. And I believe you've worked with Gitche before too,
yep,
right? You've
and Winner.
And yep. Winner, yeah. Yep. So I may ask you some personal questions here too. the featured topic for today's conversation is not any of my dogs, though. It's Ruth Ann, Dr. Ruth Ann Lobos' two-year-old wire-haired pointing Griffon. I feel like I should say that in the bird dog stage.
That's right.
Wire-haired pointing Griffon. 2-year-old Journey, owned by Dr. Ruth Ann and her family. I'm also thrilled to welcome Sport Dog Brand as a sponsor of today's bird dog centric episode of On the Wing podcast. Thank you to both Sport Dog Brand and to Purina Pro Plan for bringing you this episode. In fact, I'm also proud to recognize Purina as a national dog food sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's Wildlife Habitat Mission, and as I mentioned, the presenting sponsor of On the Wing podcast. All three of my pups, Esky, Gitche, and Winter, all eat Purina Pro Plan, not just because Purina supports the wildlife habitat conservation mission of our organization, which is incredibly important to me, but because Purina has a team of the world's best scientists and nutritionists behind their dog food. Learn more at ProPlansport.com. Purina Pro Plan, nutrition that performs. And one of those leading scientists and nutritionists, Dr. Ruth Ann, welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining again. This is, I think, your fourth episode with Anna.
I think so, yeah.
Because
yeah,
we did a couple of Ask the Vet episodes, right, and then feel like we did one at Pheasant Fest, too.
Yeah. Yeah, sure did. I know. So I'm a frequent flyer here on, yeah, on your podcast. I love it.
I can punch the card.
That's right.
All right. So tell listeners who maybe haven't heard you on the podcast before a little bit about, you know, your background. I mentioned you're a veterinary doctor, but also more specifically about your bird dog history.
Yeah, sure. So I'm going on, it'll be 20 years with Purina this November, which is insane to think. And for your listeners, I started when I was 9, so I'm still really in my prime. But yeah, so I, you know, small animal veterinarian. I am certified in rehab as well as veterinary acupuncture. And that's kind of what led me to work more with our sporting dog group before I even had bird dogs. And so just from the canine athlete aspect of things and having that specialty. And then...
So acupuncture led you to working with bird dogs?
Yeah. So from the rehab, you know, which we can't technically call it physical therapy because that's a licensed human term.
Okay.
So in the canine world, we call it canine rehabilitation.
Uh-huh.
And getting certified in that and then as well as acupuncture really kind of gave me a better insight to understanding the canine athletes that we feed, especially through our sport formula, the 30-20. And so kind of having that expertise got me linked in with our group that supports the sporting dog as well as the breeder enthusiast world. And then as I started to get a little bit more experience with that, it was around the same time that we moved to Colorado. And that was my introduction. So I'm an adult onset hunter, and it was my introduction into really owning a bird dog. We have Finn, my yellow lab, who is 10 and a half, and he is still hard charging. And it was going out one day with my husband, and he was like, "You need to see Finn chase roosters. And I think this is going to be right up your alley." You know, I run marathons. I'm a recovering triathlete. and so I like to be active, and certainly hunting public land and chasing roosters, you're running and moving. And seeing Finn really in his element out there chasing those roosters, just what sparked for me an obligation to be able to be part of what he is genetically designed to do and loves to do. So that was, I like to call him my gateway dog.
So your husband was right.
Yes, yes, he was right for once.
You know, he just stepped out.
I know. Otherwise, I wouldn't admit it if you were here. And then as we are, so Finn has never been formally hunt trained.
Okay.
We got him when he was 2.5, and it just was one of those where it was in his DNA to retrieve, and he was formally obedience trained before we got him, which I feel is kind of foundational to, you know, having a well-trained bird dog, is that obedience has to be there. So he had both the genetics and then that obedience training, and then, you know, just putting him in the right spot. So it was one of those, as a flusher, no offense, Justin, but I feel it's a little bit, there's a little less finesse that's involved when versus having a pointing breed. And Justin can probably jump in and expound on that. But so it was one of those, as Finn is getting older, we are also getting older and chasing after a flusher who is quasi-trained, was a little bit more challenging, which led us into really kind of starting to look at pointing breeds as an option for us and our next bird dog.
Gotcha. And how'd you land on a Griff?
A lot of the research was done actually by Dean, my husband. He kind of was looking around, and we knew, like, we had had a GSP before, Stella. She lived to be almost 18. She was about...
Holy cow! I know. 18?
18, yeah. She was 3 months shy of her 18th birthday when we had to put her down.
Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy.
So do you attribute that longevity to anything you did, or just...
Well, naturally.
Well, that's...
No. What? I mean, so yes. Yes and no. I mean, I think one of the biggest things, and you've probably heard me talk a lot about this, is she was kept lean her whole life. So, you know, keeping her in ideal body condition, you know, she, you know, was active. I mean, even the day we put her down, she still went, we took her on a mile walk and she was still raring to go.
Wow.
She had cancer in her mouth. And so that was becoming too much of a quality of life issue for her. But I think it was a combination of both keeping her lean, that solid nutrition. So she was on Purina, you know, 16 and a half of her years, because I didn't meet Dean till she was a year old. So I didn't have that influence. between that and then, you know, that preventative maintenance that we did for her and regular, you know, regular checkups. I was always up in her business really looking for lumps and bumps or anything like that was, you know, all part of it. But I mean, this is probably a totally different topic for another day, but she was a pointer who had a tail. So when Dean got her from a breeder out of Kansas, she did not dock tails.
Okay.
And I would watch her walk even as, you know, a 17-year-old, and she would use that tail as a rudder and really help with her balance. And so part of me, you know, wonders, like, is that what helped to keep her, was just an added benefit as she got into her older age to have that little lever there on her backside. I don't know. She's only one. So
yeah.
That's all I've got to compare to. But yeah, so I think that, you know, kind of all of that combined helped to keep her around that long. But she did not hunt. She was, had just crazy noise phobia, and it just was one of those, up until she went deaf at about probably 14 or 15, you know, thunderstorms would roll in and it was just not good for her. So she was never a hunting dog. But marathon trainer with my training buddy and all of that. And so having a pointer, certainly being around a lot of pointers in this world of bird dogs, but my husband also does a lot of waterfowl hunting. And so we wanted, knowing we lived in Colorado in the colder weather, wanted something maybe with a little bit of a thicker coat. And so we looked at draughts and the German wire hairs and all kinds of different breeds, but really just kind of the reputation of Griff's being such a good family dog and knowing we don't professionally hunt, you know, so,
yet,
right. Wanted a dog that would be good in the house too. And, kind of just have a goofy personality. And that's what Journey is for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
You agree with the assessment?
Definitely has a quirkier attitude.
Really?
Happy paws for sure. Anytime she's around people, she's very prancy and excited to be working with that person, no matter who it is.
A few minutes ago, Ruthann talked about pointers versus retriever flushes being more finesse. Yeah, what's your take on that? Because I know you've trained, I'm assuming you've trained predominantly flushing breeds here at Dawkins.
So mainly, obviously, we're known as the lab people, the flushing people. We do specialize in pointers as well, as Mike has trained Gitchy and will be training Winter here coming up. I've been training pointers for the last 5 years, so everything's just a little different between a lab and a pointer, or a flushing breed and a pointer. All flushing breeds normally have a pretty decent retrieve. You just got to add a little bit of rules on there, and then you get the pointing side. Some of them have the natural retrieve and some of them have zero retrieve. So we got lucky with Journey, and she was very, I would say, naughty on the retrieve. She kind of wanted to chomp on birds and not bring them right back to you, kind of take her time and do what she wanted to do with that bird. And so we had a lot of rules to
empathize
add.
With you.
We had to add a lot of rules to that retrieve, which we'll talk about later.
So tell us how, you know, you live in Colorado, Dr. Ruthann, how you ended up, like, I just can't get Journey to where I want to be. So tell us a little bit about what Journey was good right out of the womb and where you were struggling.
Sure. So first off, she's only 15 months, so she's not quite 2 years yet. But when, you know, I mean, so there was a couple of things that that I knew we were going to need. And so we're in Boulder, and it is, it takes a good chunk of time to get somewhere where you could, you know, you can fire a gun and not have the whole entire county at your police at your doorstep. So I knew there was going to be a little bit of, sort of a range for us to get access to good hunting and training grounds and things like that. But so, I mean, right off the bat, certainly her personality, which she is, like I said, she's goofy little Muppet thing. And I love that just like zest for life. And she, right from the get-go, you could tell she was ready for whatever adventure we were going to take her on. And she was, you know, we worked with a trainer at the beginning from an obedience standpoint. I think that's one of the misperceptions that people think about veterinarians, is that we get a lot of training on how to train dogs. And that is, I get questions all the time about, like, how do I get my dog to sit and stay? And I'm like, you should get a trainer, because I can
teach you how to clean your dog's teeth.
Yes. And I'm like, I mean, we get education on reading dog behavior. So I could tell you if your dog is scared or not enjoying this experience, but like, how to reinforce or teach them a true skill. That is not something as veterinarians we get a lot of access to in our schooling. So when she was a puppy, we took her to puppy class, and she would go to once a week, all day obedience training. And then we would spend an hour and a half learning what she learned that day so that we could reinforce it. And so we had a pretty good foundation with obedience, mm-hmm. From the get-go. And then we had some puppy classes with intro to gunfire at a gun dog place, probably about an hour from where we were, that we'd go up on a Saturday and spend an hour and a half, kind of getting that first exposure. And she, like, I mean, that gun would go off, and you could tell she was just so excited. She was like, something good is going to happen. So that part I felt really fortunate for, because I know that intro to gunfire can go bad, sure, really quickly. And then it can be something that, you know, a dog doesn't recover from, or it takes a lot to get them recovered from. So she was, you know, no pun intended, but like bomb proof from the get go. And I've, you know, that's, to me, I was like, that was just a big aha of like, okay, she, you know, we got her from a very strong hunting line and NAVDA champion. And you know, so we wanted a dog that was, you know, it was in her DNA, right, to go and do this. And seeing that first exposure and that was just like, we have to unlock this for her, or it's not being fair to her and why we selected her and her bloodlines. And also knowing that, I was like, I would be in over my head. There's a lot of great online resources, and I've got a lot of connections in this industry that could give me verbal advice, but I'm like, I don't have the skills. I've never trained a bird dog, right, like, and I don't have the skill set. And I am now a point in my life where I'm like, I know smart people, and so I'm going to tap into them and have them. And just knowing all the great work that we've done at Purina and with the Dawkins, and it, you know, in conversations that I've had with Justin, I was like, this is going to be a good fit.
Yeah. So you drove from Colorado to Minnesota to drop off Journey?
No. Oh, so we did not.
You do an exchange at Pheasant Fest?
close. So we actually, last November, we were up in North Dakota, just outside of Bismarck, hunting, okay, with Keith Schopp over there on his land. And Justin happened to be duck hunting with a client not too far away. So we met at Keith's place just outside of Bismarck. And it was a very bizarre feeling experience for me. Like, I've known Justin for a long time. I knew where she was going to go, but to then, having never had a dog go into formal training, and be like, okay, here you go. She was, I guess, 9 months old at the time. And it just was like, it was a glimpse into the future of when I send my son off to college and drop him off at the dorm and be like, okay, see you when you're a lot smarter.
So Justin, tell us a little bit about when you brought Journey back to the kennel here to start training. What did you observe?
So right away, Ruth Ann and I had talked multiple times about the problems they were having with her retrieve, and really on the point side of things too. So when I got her in, I knew I had to kind of do a little evaluation of shoot as many birds as I could to see what the actual problems were, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that kind of bounced out right away to us was no point. As soon as she smelt that bird, she'd give a little flash point, but she's crashing and she wants that bird. So obviously the bird drives there. And then when we shot that first bird for her, it was kind of like a toy, and she wanted to chew on that thing as hard as she could, sure, before she was bringing that back to us, right? At that time, we did have her on a check cord, and we shot her a bunch of birds, and then we just kind of jumped right into training. And obviously we knew what we needed to accomplish here, one being steady to shot, a solid point, and a good retrieve, and kind of eliminate that mouthiness, what we're known to do with the training on the retrieve. So
let's start with the point.
Yep.
Take us through when you see a dog that's supposed to be pointing a bird, that's like, I love birds, and breaking through, because I've had this experience with multiple dogs, right?
That, right.
You know, it sometimes right out of the box, they're pointing everything.
Yep.
But then I've also had dogs where, particularly the more competitive of the dogs that I've had, they'll just break through point and like, I'm not letting anything, any other dog get that bird. I'm breaking through the point and going to get the bird.
Right.
Is that what you see?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Competition level of, she smells that bird. In her mind, I need to get to that bird as fast as I can. Mm-hmm. The point was not a factor at that time. Granted, now, what I noticed as well during training, when I had her on a check cord, I would notice a lot more flash points, and I would have to stop her mm-hmm. on that check cord. And then once that check cord came off, that natural point kind of started to shine. And you could really kind of trust her more so on that point of just letting her lock up and do her thing. Now, one thing with a pointing breed that helps a lot when you're kind of building that point is a bird launcher,
yep.
right? They cannot get to that bird. You got to see them with Gitchy out here. We use those every day with her. So early on, training her on that bird launcher, just in the yard throwing birds for me, just so she could get used to that popping noise of that launcher mm-hmm. and then putting it out in that tall grass. So if she did want to crash in, there was no way that bird was going out there until I clicked the button, which helps out a lot. And then what you can also do with that is pop it as they're breaking that point and just let that bird go away. That's teaching that dog, if they don't want to hold that point, that they're not going to get that bird shot for them, right?
So I want to underscore that point, because I think that's one of the most critical components of using a launcher for people to understand. You got pigeons. Somehow yep. you've been able to find pigeons.
Yep,
right?
Yep, yep.
You got pigeons, and you got a pup on a check cord. An ideal scenario is the pup will point naturally, the pigeon in the launcher, and you reinforce that with holding the check cord on the dog, right?
Correct.
But the moment that dog breaks point and goes towards the launcher, you pop the bird, releasing the bird out of the launcher to try to reinforce the fact in the dog's minds, like, if I break, if I crowd, if I creep, this bird is going to get away.
Correct.
Right? So it's how many times, I'm sure the answer is going to be like, it all depends on the dog, but how many birds being released on the creep or on the break before a dog starts to put it together in their head?
It
doesn't take a lot.
It doesn't take, it all really depends on the dog, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, some dogs, one bird and, oh, I'm never breaking that point again. Mm-hmm. Some dogs are so driven to retrieve that bird and have so much drive that they want to go get that bird that it can take a couple dozen birds. Now, using pigeons, homing pigeons, they're going to go right back to the pen. So you're not out anything.
Sure.
You can go right up to the pen and grab that bird 20 minutes later and go back out and put it in that same launcher and use it again if you want. It all just kind of depends on the dog. Now, let's talk, like, if you have, let's say, a setter, it might only take a couple times that more of a natural point to it. Now, with Journey, she wanted that bird bad. She was doing what she could do to get that bird. We also used a snow fence with Journey as well. Yeah, so it's four posts just in the ground, T-posts with a snow fence around it, and we put the launchers in there. That way she couldn't totally crowd those launchers and
gotcha.
Get on top of them. Kind of holds her back, and then that's where you can kind of get away with not using the check cord, because she can't get to that. It holds her back a couple feet. So,
because the worst case scenario, or one of the worst case scenarios, is the pup breaks point and then gets on the launcher so quickly that the arms of the launcher actually couldn't hit the
correct
the dog,
correct
right? And
correct
that,
yep,
that would cause fear and then
correct.
Create some issues around pointing.
Correct. Now, before you even bring the launcher out into the field, we want to have it in the yard, just at home. Just working it in the short grass right at home.
Working the launcher.
Yep,
in
the launcher. That way they get used to seeing that thing pop. They get used to the noise that's happening. They get used to what's throwing from it. Because a lot of times that loud noise of a launcher, that can spook a duck. Mm. It's just like gunfire. Their first couple times, you don't just want to throw them in tall grass, and now they're 2 feet from it on point, and that thing goes off. I mean, it's got a little bang to it. Mm-hmm. It's metal launching something, so it can add a little noise, and that can spook some dogs because it's not just a bird getting up, right? Sure. And it throws that bird up in the air a little quicker than a bird's going to get off the ground, right? It's going to get it up above our heads yep. in a matter of a second versus a bird flushing off the ground. And I'll, like an example yesterday in the rain when we're out shooting birds, I mean, those launchers came key when we're shooting wet birds in the rain because those birds are not going to fly. They're going to run that ground as long as they can before they get up. Well, with a pointing dog, that's not what you want. So right. having that launcher, using that capability of that to get those birds up to actually fly so we can work on steady to shot like we did yesterday.
So one thing that I'm sure I know I thought early on was you start working dogs with a launcher. And I was thinking about rather than a check cord, having an e-collar on, right?
Okay.
And
like, yep.
And having, if that dog broke, then using the e-collar. But that's not a good means of the step-by-step
nope.
process, is
so
it?
We actually started showing Journey launchers before we were even really relying on that collar. We're mm-hmm. still in the collar learning process, collar training process with her. So everything was kind of relied on a check cord. Now, and in our mind, you don't want to make a subject bad with that e-collar, especially when the dog doesn't know what that e-collar fully means yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they know, oh, okay, it irritates me a little bit versus I know, okay, I got bumped on the collar. I need to come back to heel or I need to go on point. So relying on that check cord to kind of stop them and hold them back from it. And so it's not a discipline for when that goes off. Because normally the first couple times a launcher goes off, a dog's going to jump forward, mm-hmm. right? They want to go after whatever's getting thrown for them. And we're using that check cord to just hold her back until she stayed still and then let her go get that retrieve. And then you're kind of giving her what she wants, but you're also getting what you want without making it a bad habit in there.
So the having Journey get used to check cord, point, launcher.
Yep.
That was the first step, right?
Yep. In the pointing side. Yep. And then doing a little bit of wing on a rod with her, but we wanted to see what we could get out of her with using those launchers, especially. So in the yard, having running like a mark with a dog with a launcher, doing that in the yard with live clipwing pigeons for. So that bird was out running mm-hmm. around. So it wasn't just like a dummy got launched out of there and it fell on the ground and it didn't move. It's a pigeon, gets up in the air, it flies a little bit, and then it falls to the ground and it's running around flapping its wings, keeping her engaged in that. So it's not just, oh, I go right back to the launcher because that's what threw it. We mm-hmm. want to keep her focus on that bird.
And you worked, I'm assuming you worked on the point for a while before you even started worrying about the retrieve.
Nope.
Oh, you started right away.
Yeah, started that retrieve right away because I knew going into it that retrieve was very naughty. we had a lot of work to do on that retrieve,
Ruthann,
right?
It's not your fault.
No.
when you have a lot of work to do on a retrieve, obedience comes natural. And like Ruthann said, they already had been doing obedience classes. There was a foundation there, right?
Okay.
Now we needed to get that off leash. We needed to get her collar trained. The longest thing to do with any dog, a flushing breed or a pointing breed, is fix that retrieve. Mm. That's what takes the longest. Mm. If you came to me today, Bob, and said, hey, all I need you to do is obedience on this dog, I would tell you a certain time and that's all it's going to take. Versus the retrieve, that's what it kind of goes dog by dog. It's different for everyone. Mm. I mean, you could have two of the same dogs from the same breeding and one takes onto it right away and the other one it's a little bit tougher for that one to learn, so we need to keep evolving that retrieve. So I would say the training the retrieve was definitely the hardest thing with her. And the first time Ruthann came down back in February, the retrieve was starting to come around, but it still wasn't perfect. Hmm. With little birds, a pigeon or a chucker, she was perfect with them, deliver everything to hand. But then you'd get the confidence of a bigger, like a hen or a rooster.
Sure.
It was a little bit of a confidence factor of her grabbing that and being able to hold on to that bird.
Huh.
And then obviously here this past weekend, we were shooting roosters all day for her and letting them enjoy some big birds in her mouth and seeing her bring those all the way to hand. So
my perspective was it was going to be the opposite. In other words, like the bigger birds with a full body in the dog's mouth actually would be a little easier.
Correct.
Because where I've struggled with some of my dogs is like a Bob White or a Woodcock where they just want to swallow the whole thing,
yep.
right? So what's the percentage breakdown on dogs that you know, are harder to retrieve with the small birds versus the big birds?
Normally, a dog with a bigger bird, it fills their mouth. It's easier for them to hold it.
Uh-huh.
Now, with Journey, she was a little bit mouthy with those birds. So with a bigger bird with more weight and she'd be mouthing it, it would slide out of her mouth faster, right? So now she's constantly dropping it. Now, Journey's not a big dog by any means. So like yesterday, we saw plenty of her stepping on roosters' tails and ripping it out of her own mouth, right? Just from stepping on that tail or the wing.
Sure.
So the smaller birds kind of gave us a factor too of training her on that mouthy gotcha. Side of it, and getting her to actually hold things. And then you go back to the training the retrieve when we're having her pick up fetching sticks or dummies, we're using smaller objects to see that mouth actually work, so we can correct that. So when it does come to the bird, there's no mouth there. It's just holding that bird with a solid hold.
And what have your observations been along the way, Ruthann?
Yeah, so it was interesting coming out in, I guess that was the beginning of February, yep. that I came out for a day, and it was brutally cold that day. It was awesome. I think it was in the negatives and negative 20-something wind chill factor. I was like, oh, welcome to Minnesota. But watching her at that point, I was like, oh my gosh, like look at all she's learned. Mm. I could tell that she was still extremely rough around the edges, and like what, you know, Justin was talking about, it's still a bit mouthy on the bird. And and then coming back out here 6 weeks later and just watching her, I mean, the level of refinement and that has come is, to me, I like that first day when we were here on Saturday, and I was like, oh my gosh, like she's really blossoming into a bird dog.
Sure.
And just her confidence too. But what I also think is fun is like she, you can tell she just loves to work, and she gets so excited. And, you know, whether you know, if she didn't do something right and we're correcting her, I mean, she's still, her nub is still, you know, wagging a million miles a second. And she's just like, just okay. I know.
Nub?
Yeah. Her tail. It's a little nub. you know, having a Labrador, those are tails. She has a nub, you know, but she's just like, okay, well, give me another chance. I want another shot at it, you know? And again, to me, like, that's just, you know, reassurance that we were doing the right thing by her, and that she was in a really good place, you know, with Justin and here at Dokken, of just like doing it the right way, where she's hungry for it. And, and so that was just a lot of fun to see her, in that element.
What was the most difficult hurdle? Was there a singular moment that you're like, boy, that was going to be a challenge, Justin, to get Journey over the hump?
I would say steady to shot was
getting
her over the hump, because she was so fueled to go get that bird that she wanted. As soon as that bird got up, like, she's like, I'm going after this thing.
So explain steady to shot for folks that maybe have only owned a golden retriever.
Yeah, so steady to shot is dogs on point. We go and kick up that bird. That dog is not allowed to break until I give it the okay to go. Journey's okay to go is tapping her on the head and saying her name. So we were training all day yesterday on it of birds get up. She's got to stay on point. Watch that bird go. It gets shot. It's on the ground. And now I tell her when to go get that bird for us. And so the typical pointer, the way we train it here at the kennel, is steady to flush. So dog goes on point. As soon as we kick that bird up, they're free to go and get that bird. So we did that on Saturday with some roosters, and then yesterday we applied the steady to shot that I've been training her on for the last couple months. And that's really unique to see, and you can see the challenges. There was one yesterday that got up, and we thought it was folded and dead, but it was just a wing shot. And we were like, oh, where'd she go? She's in the standing corn chasing that rooster around, and all of a sudden she appears. So there is some benefits from steady to shot, especially for Ruthann being out in Colorado. They're up in the scaly mountains, so one could be on a steep side, and you don't want that dog to go launching off that top. So,
yeah, chucker hunters in particular, I think,
correct,
about want their dog steady to wing, shot, and release.
Correct, yep.
So is Journey trained to that level at
correct
this point?
Yep.
Wow. That's exciting.
Yeah. It's also a lot of pressure going home. This is also the same feeling I had when we had our human child and we're leaving the hospital, and like the nurse hands us Alexander and is like, okay, see you later. And I like look in the backseat and I'm like, oh my God, I have this human. Like, I mean, I kind of know what to do and I'll follow my instincts, but I hope I don't mess things up. And that's kind of this feeling that I have in the back of my head as we're going to drive back to Boulder today of like, oh wow, I've got this really well-trained dog and I don't want to mess her up. So I got a lot of work I got to keep doing.
Is there one thing in particular you're worried about, quote unquote, messing her up?
I think so. One of the things, and it sounds silly, but like, you know, the commands per se, you know, we use their name, you know, we use Finn's name a lot in the house and have with Journey. And so now knowing like that's kind of her command to like go, to, you know, to make sure that we're not inappropriately using it and then not, you know, being able to have that same consistency when we're out in the field.
Yeah. And you, your husband, your son, everybody came.
Oh yeah.
For this process. 'Cause that's an important component too, right? Train the entire family.
Yes. Yeah. And it's really like, it warmed my heart to see Alexander. So he's 10 and he is, you know, he is all in this training. And he's like, can I take her again and practice heel and, you know, and that sort of thing. And so knowing that it's not going to be too long before he could be, you know, taking her out hunting and that sort of thing, that they'll probably be hitting their prime together, is a really neat experience that I'm glad, that he is all in as he is.
And what homework, Justin, did you give Ruth Ann and her family to keep Journey maintained
so
at this level?
Obviously, we're here in the spring. Hunting season is kind of done. Doesn't fire back up here for 3-4 months. So I really kind of put into their mind of, we need to stay on top of the retrieve. We can't just go home and just let her be a dog. We got to keep enforcing that retrieve, even in the backyard, and then continuing working on that steady to shot. That's not something, just like any athlete, you got to practice in the off season. You can't just show up day one and expect that steady to shot to be perfect by any means. Same with the retrieve. You kind of have to keep them well prepared. So we sent them home with the retrieving drills, showed her how to run her at a game farm, working on that steady to shot, even doing retrieves in the backyard with steady to shot, having a thrower throw them for her, just to keep enforcing everything so everything stays well tuned we go.
Because that was going to be my question. Yeah. You know, Journey's going home. It's spring.
Yep.
We are a long ways from, you know, being able to chase birds with a shotgun. And, you know, Dr. Ruth Ann mentioned, you know, she doesn't live in a place where, you know, there's a lot of easy access to running a dog on wild birds and, or even for that matter, you know, game farm trained birds.
Correct.
So they're using a launcher in your backyard.
Having a person stand out in front and throw as well.
Throwing doing bumpers.
Like, yeah, throwing bumpers, frozen birds with, or bumpers with wings on them, just to keep that going. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not the live bird experience, but we did also talk about getting our hands on pigeons and working on that steady to shot and just launching pigeons in the backyard and letting them fly away and come right back to the coop, just to keep enforcing that and throwing bumpers on retrieves nonstop. That's kind of going to be the game here for the next 4 or 5 months.
We did buy a couple cap guns.
Okay.
So that we can at least simulate a small popping noise, again without alerting the authorities.
Sure. Yep.
But that's, will that be effective? Cap gun?
Yeah, we use blank pistols all the time in training here at the kennel. That's probably one of our biggest uses every day is a blank pistol. It's a lot more versatile than carrying a shotgun around. Not every place can you just let BBs fly everywhere. Sure. You can shoot a blank pretty much anywhere you're at. So Journey had a lot of exposure to a blank pistol while she was here. Just a lot easier, especially when a dog's on a check cord and you're working the fundamentals of things. I don't have four arms to be able to hold a shotgun and run a check cord at the same time. So having that blank pistol to be able to throw in your pocket and then be able to grab the cord and use it when you need to, or using the e-collar. It's already, for a new dog person with a trained dog, it's already tough to run the e-collar and hunt at the same time. So when you're training, to be able to just throw that pistol in your pocket and then have both hands accessible to that e-collar makes your life a lot easier.
So you brought me exactly where I wanted to go. Right, we've talked about, you know, the work on the point with the launcher, and we've talked on about cleaning up the retrieve, steady to wing shot and release. At what point did you add an e-collar into the training?
So day one, we would have put one on, or we just wouldn't have used it. We would
just
have
to get used to it.
Yep, just to wear it around. And then about week two, I started implying on the sport dog collar, we have a low, medium, high setting. On low, I was using number one just to give her a little irritation as I was pulling on the check cord.
Connecting e-collar the dots. Electricity to the check cord pull.
Correct, just for your basic recall. And now, like a number one for all the listeners, you physically cannot feel anywhere on your body. It's ran so light on those collars that you can't feel it. So the dog just gets a light irritation from it, using vibrate as well, just for a little more factor. Vibrate's a little excessive compared to the stimulation ranges of a collar, right? The vibrate is like your phone. So that on a dog's neck kind of is like, oh, okay, there's something there versus that light stimulation. But then collar training a dog, you kind of have to have the fundamentals of the obedience. You have to have a recall where you can pull on them on a check cord to get them to come back before you can start employing that e-collar. You have to be able to give a little leash tug on a dog while you're walking, especially when they're pulling on you, to start employing that e-collar. But that e-collar training process was about a 5-week process with Journey before I could let her run around off leash without a check cord dragging, just to know I had full control of her, right? So putting those two and two together to start training her, what that e-collar meant, and then slowly let it just keep evolving as we are going through obedience training and training on the retrieve.
Gotcha. One thing that having a number of my dogs come to you guys that sticks with me, you know, no matter what dog, is the timing.
Correct.
Right? Like whether it's the check cord, the launcher, the e-collar, timing of when something goes awry, you know, whether that's the dog breaks point, and the timing for me as the surrogate trainer, right?
Yep.
As the apprentice, to connect with whatever the correction is, whether that's a tug on the check cord, whether it's a release of the bird, whether it's a vibrate on an e-collar, the timing is so critically important.
Correct.
Isn't it, Justin?
Correct. So timing is key when you're training a dog. You can't be late to the party, as we say. So,
what's too late?
Really, a split second
It's a split second, right?
I'll use an example. Yesterday, we were out in the field working, and Ruth Ann was a little late to the correction, and I said, hey, I saw that about 5 steps before you corrected her. Granted, I do this every day, so things come natural to me now at this point of seeing where I need to correct the dog. And we talked about that. If you start to see something go wrong with a finished pointing dog like this at this point, you have to be able to correct it right then and there. We can't be searching for the e-collar. Mm-hmm. We got to keep that fine-tuned. So eventually in a year or so, when you're out there hunting, everything's just natural. She knows, Journey knows that, okay, if I mess up, mom is going to correct me for it, versus I got a free pass on this one, but maybe next time I get a correction. So timing is very well a key. And when I was learning the whole training process from Mike and Tom 7 years ago, they would stand there and tell you, you're late to the party on this one. You gotta see that before it happens. So you don't want to be too late, because then in the dog's mind, they don't know what they're getting corrected for at that point.
It's like, I don't know. I guess it could have been that, but that happened like 5 seconds ago.
Right, correct.
Yeah. I'm anthropomorphizing, but we all do that.
Yep.
The other thing that I've noticed in myself, and I think you probably encounter this having another dog, right? You have Finn, and there's only so much time in the day, and you get home from work and you want to run the dogs and exercise them. And you got a whole different challenge because you got a pointer and a flusher.
Yeah.
What I've challenged with a younger dog, as I'm trying to train a younger dog and I've got two older dogs, and like, well, I'm going to go run all three of them on right now, as we're recording, spring woodcock are migrating through Minnesota. It's illegal to run on public lands. And, you know, you got three dogs. Yeah, I got three dogs on my e-collar, but I don't know which one's going to screw up.
Right.
So you got to be able not only to correct quickly, you got to correct the right dog.
Right.
Have you thought about what you're going to do when it comes to running two dogs? Like, are you going to stay true and run them independently, or are you planning to run them together at some
I mean, certainly for this first go round, or this upcoming season, we'll run them separate. Mm-hmm. Finn has never, we've hunted with other dogs, like, you know, when we've hunted with Keith or other folks, and, you know, they're kind of over on one side and we're over on the other, but mm-hmm. never as like a pointing flushing team. Mm-hmm. And I just think because Journey, while she's finished, she's still, you know, her exposure to wild birds is very minimal. And so really, like, I can envision when we go out hunting with her that it's going to be kind of I'm walking with my dog and it's more of a training session. And if I happen to fire my gun, great. But only if things go exactly how they should. So because of that, I think they'll run. We'll run them separately probably for all of next year. And then, you know, it makes me choke up to say, but Finn's 10 and a half. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know how many, that's the part to me that's like, ugh, yeah. You know, yeah. Punch you in the gut. 'Cause he's my OG hunting yeah. buddy. And, you know, to see how, you know, we all have to retire dogs. Yeah. That's the nature of the game. And the fact that he still is as hard charging as he is at 10 and a half is unreal. But, you know, so it'll depend, you know, maybe in 2 years when not this season, but next, and he's a little even more low key and Journey's more dialed in, then maybe they go together. But that'll be the future. Will hold yeah. that secret for us.
That's a challenge that I think we all struggle with it.
Yeah.
Particularly when folks transition between a pointing dog and a flushing dog or yeah. vice versa, you know, and one dog's just getting older and you're like, well, geez, how do I leave one dog in the truck? When it comes to that pointing dog, just running them with a flusher is going to break down all that, right? Like,
yep.
just
yep.
You
know, yep.
no matter how well trained, especially a dog as competitive as what it sounds like Journey
Correct.
Is, it's going to unravel the training probably instantly, won't it?
Yeah, it'd be a pretty quick turnaround for her. And one of the big things this first season for Ruth Ann and her family is going to be learning that pointing dog. They've been hunting the last 10 years or 8 to 10 years with a flushing dog, mm-hmm. This is a totally different ball game.
Yep.
You're used to that bird getting kicked up for you. Now you are the one kicking that bird up for the dog necessarily. So there's a big learning curve here for them as we go into the first season, and we've addressed it over a couple days here this weekend of a lot of birds being shot over Journey just to show them the different scenarios of what all can happen and go from.
Has Journey hunted with other pointers?
Nope.
Even in honor at this point could surprise Journey, and you don't
Correct.
Know exactly
Correct.
What Journey's going to react to
Correct.
The pressure, potential pressure of another dog pointing a bird.
Correct. And that's where the steady to shot really came into effect for Ruth Ann, knowing she's going to hunt with multiple different people in the outdoor industry mm-hmm. That have pointing dogs as well. We need to make sure that she honors or stays on that shot. So if it's not her turn to retrieve, it's not her turn to retrieve,
sure.
right? We got to tap her on the head for her to go. So we wanted to make sure that we enforced that steady to shot. So when it does come time in the next couple of years of Ruth Ann hunting with other people, that it's not just a big runaround
sure.
circus.
I don't want to piss off my other hunting buddies.
Yeah, right, right.
So as we head towards a wrap-up, I've got a yeah. fun question for each of you. But before that, I want to kind of get your final thoughts on Journey and the training process and as you sit on the precipice of heading home with Journey and welcoming her back into the family pack. Before we get the final thoughts, I want to thank once again Purina Pro Plan for being the presenting sponsor of On the Wing podcast and for Sport Dog Brand for being the sponsor of this particular bird dog centric episode. All right. So Ruth Ann, as you get ready here to drive home to Colorado with a fully trained pup, what's left on your mind is, and it could be as simple as thoughts for other people leaving their dog with a trainer.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I still am so grateful for is the partnership with Dokken and Justin and just the relationship that we've developed over dogs. I mean, I think that's the beauty of the industry that we're in, of dogs are, just such an amazing connector for people. And that, it was interesting. You know, I got a little bit of hate from some, you know, some keyboard keysters that are out there when I posted that she was going to formal training, that I was taking the easy way out, that I was not being a true great bird dog owner. And
did
blah,
you really?
Blah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
A lot of it?
A lot. Not a lot. Probably more than I was really expecting. Huh. And
that's unfortunate.
I know. And I would say, you know, this is all, one of my real passion points is that, like, if you get a sporting dog, they come with a DNA and a need for mental enrichment and really being able to unlock their genetics. Mm-hmm. And so if you are not willing to either do that yourself or find someone to help you do that, you should not have a sporting dog. And so that's where, you know, I'm like, if you're thinking about getting a sporting dog or you have one and you don't have the means to unlock their genetics, that it is so important to find someone who can help you.
Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree with, you know, for folks that are trolling online, if you're using a professional dog training, I'm like, come on.
Right.
Like, we can't all be experts in everything. And, you know, finding people that can help you and your dog succeed in your goals, that's, you know, have some humility.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, people.
Well, and it's not even just that. I mean, most people, they work a 9-to-5 job. Mm-hmm. Dog training can't be, oh, I can only do it a couple days this week and then I can't pick it up for a couple weeks. It's an everyday thing. It's not something, especially when you're teaching a young dog, steady to shot, trained retrieve, obedience, collar training. You can't just do it for a couple of days and take a break and then pick it back up where you left off. It's a multiple day, multiple session, especially for Journey. It was 4 months of 5, 6, 7, 8, 20-minute sessions a day of nonstop, 6 days of the week. We're going. She'd get one day off on Sundays, and it's a nonstop, repetitive game of keeping that and keeping it engraved in her head.
And hopefully 18 years worth of
recovered
roosters. As
correct.
Any final thoughts from a training perspective, Justin?
No, just keep up on the training and really – for Ruth Ann, she knows us all very well. So for her, if she has any questions, she knows she can reach out at any time. And she sees us quite frequently, women on the wing out in South Dakota with Mrs. Dockin, and then obviously Pheasant Fest. So twice a year she gets to see us. And this year I offered her to bring her dog out to South Dakota in August, and we can do a little training for 5 days before she takes back off out to Colorado and hunting season kicks back off. So,
and if folks want to find Dockin, reach out to you, how do they get a hold of you?
Calling the main office or sending an email into the kennel, Dockin's Oak Ridge Kennels, Northfield, Minnesota, to get a hold of us and tell either Mike Wieben or Justin King you want to talk to be able to set up your training needs.
Cool. Final question, fun one.
Oh,
you get to go on a hunt anywhere with anyone, any bird. Where are you going? We'll start with Dr. Ruth Ann.
Oh, boy. That's a tough one because there's so many that are still on my list of birds that I want to check off. I mean, I think it would be fun to be I've not chased Chucker yet. And as I've said, I'm pretty – I like a lot of activity on my hunt. So I would I'd probably go hunt some Chucker.
And you got the dog for it now.
I know.
Steady to wing, shot, and release.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah. And where – somewhere in Chucker land. I'm going to leave that one wide open so I don't narrow down my options too much in case anybody wants to take me out.
There you go. Dr. Ruth is looking for a Chucker hunt somewhere with Journey ready to roll.
Yeah,
that's right.
What about you, Justin?
I would have to say king eiders in Alaska. As a duck hunting guy, I do.
That might have been Mike Wieben's answer.
Yeah,
too.
I would definitely go with Mike Wieben up there. But I would also like to chase chuckers out in the western states.
Well, I think we got a hunt plan.
I haven't done that
yet either.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun being up in those mountains watching those cubbies of chuckers flush, especially with a very good dog behind on point. So.
So we got to get winter ready for Chucky hunting this fall. There you
go. Hey, she's coming in pretty here. She is. She's pretty soon. So. Yeah,
she's a sweetheart, but she could use a little training.
Yeah, and we'll get that all summed up this summer and be ready for fall.
Well, thank you both. This has been a lot of fun. Yeah. Congratulations on Journey heading home. You're going to have a... you know, hopefully 15 years, you know, maybe even 18 years
That's
of wonderful
right.
experience. all right, folks, for Purina Pro Plan, for Sport Dog, for Dr. Ruth Ann Lobos, and Doc in Oak Ridge Kennels, Justin King, I'm Bob St. Pierre, reminding you to always follow the dog. Something good will rise. Thanks for listening.